Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Mobile hunters, if you're interested in upping your mobile game, then head to tetherednation.com and check out their saddle gear. There are a few things that you can buy that will actually help you become a better deer hunter or give you the freedom to hunt any tree or any situation. This reason is why I started saddle hunting in the first place and why I use Tethered's gear. I can honestly say that Tethered's saddle gear has changed how I hunt for the better. Big tree, little tree, from the ground, it doesn't matter. I'm untethered by my gear to hunt the best setup for the situation instead of hunting for a tree that my gear can use. My current core setup consists of the Phantom saddle, Tethered One Sticks, and the Predator platform, and along with an assortment of their accessories. So if you want to up your mobile game, head over to tetherednation.com. If you're like me, you spend a lot of time poring over maps, looking at weather data, all in an effort to help predict when and where my best times are to hunt. It'd be nice if there was a reliable source with all this information in one place. Enter the Spartan Forge app. Unlike some other predictive apps on the market, Spartan Forge was created from military combat intelligence experience tailored for hunters and stands at the nexus of machine learning and whitetail deer hunting. No more man-made algorithms. This is a predictive model based on real GPS collared deer data, historical and predictive weather, and the next level of mapping imagery, all at my fingertips. I've had an opportunity to use the desktop version of Spartan Forge last year and recently the beta version of the iOS app, and it has replaced all of my other mapping tools. Visit SpartanForge.ai and sign up today to get your place in line as the fully available mobile app is coming soon. This podcast is brought to you by Skull Brew Coffee Company. Skull Brew Coffee roasts premium single origin coffee guaranteed to deliver the freshest coffee directly to your doorstep. The kicker? They're 2% for conservation certified and donate 10% of their proceeds back to organizations who support the interests of our hunting community. So go to skullbrewcoffee.com and pick up one of their 3 killer roasts and fuel your hunt and fill more tags with Skull Brew Coffee. Welcome to the Truths from the Stand Deer Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Skull Brew Coffee Company. I'm your host, Clint Campbell, and you're listening to episode number 256. Today, we're coming to you live from Kansas, so stay tuned. All right. What is up, everyone? Happy Wednesday to you. Hope you're doing well. Hope you are feeling fine. This is take two. We screwed up the first intro, so we're going to keep it real with you guys and give you the straight dope, not hide anything. Messed up the first intro pretty bad. We're working in some confined spaces here. We're in the rut trailer, the rut wagon, the mauve bomber. We are in Kansas going on 2 weeks, stinky, dirty, dusty. I mean, my whole inside of my truck is just coated with a film of dust. Like, I feel like I could actually get inside my truck and make a little sandcastle.
You probably could.
With the amount of dust that's in there. Like, while I'm driving, I can feel the dust, like, hitting my teeth. Like, with the anytime, like, the fan kicks on for anything, I can just feel it, like, in my mouth. It's pretty disgusting.
Every time you spit, yep.
Yeah, totally. But before we jump into today's podcast, have a bit of housekeeping to do for you guys really quick. Just want to pass this along. My buddy Cameron over at huntinggeardeals.com always has a bunch of sales going on, and it doesn't matter what brand you guys are into. He's not brand specific. He just goes out, literally, he and his team find the best deals across the internet for any brand of hunting gear you can possibly imagine, and then bring it to you guys so you guys can save some cash. Of course, right now, with the holidays and stuff coming up, there is a tab on the website. So if you go to huntinggeardeals.com, there is a Black Friday and a Cyber Monday in the global nav of the website. If you click on those, you will find deals specific to those. So head over to huntinggeardeals.com, sign up for the newsletter to make sure that you are in the know for whenever new deals come up, because they have new stuff basically pops up every single day. And if you want to do any reviews for the gear that is on the site, or want to try to get involved and give Cameron a hand in doing some reviews, you can email him at cameron.huntinggeardeals@gmail.com. So with that, we'll just jump into today's podcast. I'm with my brother from another mother, Mr. Chad Cherokee Sylvester. He's got a new nickname now. Before it was Rodeo.
We're just adding them.
We're just adding them, man. Yeah, you know, it's before he was Rodeo, as longtime listeners will know, Chad rode professional rodeo. Rode them their bulls. Yeah. I thought I was going to have to ride a bull the other day.
You got close.
I got close.
You got close.
Had a bull creep up on me. Not an elk. a steer of some sort crept up on me in this piece of walk-in that I was hunting. But no, we've been getting after it for just about 2 weeks now, and we are 1-for-2 so far. I would say, well, let's just start here. Let me ask you this. Your expectation of the trip, what has your kind of feeling, you know, expectation, amount of deer you might see, the challenge or lack of challenge of the hunt, like just what are your kind of feelings outside of, you know, filling a tag or not filling a tag, just like what were you expecting coming in and where did it land based on that kind of initial expectation?
I was expecting to see a lot of deer from behind the glass, knowing that we were probably going to have to, you know, drive, use the vehicles, glass deer, and then have opportunities to spot and stalk, basically. Yeah. That was my expectations. And, you know, as far as filling a tag, it was like a 130 or better, like wasn't coming out to really seek a specific
giant,
caliber deer or giant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like if it was a good deer, like, hey, let's go get them. Let's go have some fun.
Yeah.
The challenge is that, we kind of figured out right away. One, it's very difficult to glass these things in some of these Milo and corn fields. I mean, the ag fields here are ginormous. And it is really difficult to see them. And then once you see them, a lot of times you can't go play with them.
Yeah,
you just don't have the opportunity to go mess with them.
They're either going over a horizon, or maybe you might be on a small piece of weehaw to where it's like, you know, they're just jumping the fence line over into the private or whatever the case is. Yeah, I agree with you, man. It's but anyway, go ahead.
So, I mean, we kind of, being out here in turkey season, I kind of felt like these draw systems and ditches were very complex, and I knew it was going to be difficult to glass, but glassing them in this Milo that's only, I'd say, 4 or 5 feet tall, something like that, it's just super, super tough to see them. And then as we got going, I think we kind of got better at it. I think obviously some crops being harvested and pushing deer into some CRP areas and into the timber a little more was definitely a major help.
Yeah.
But it's been harder than expected, but not so overly bearing that I wouldn't want to come back necessarily.
Right. Yeah. No, I think I'm in the same boat as you. Like my expectation, I was very much of the mind that it was going to be similar to what I experienced in Iowa. That was aside from like the glassing component of it. I knew that was going to be different because I've really never done that other than hunting out west for elk and mule deer and whatever. Never done that for whitetails. I was hell bent on this trip of doing a spot and stalk or shooting one from the ground, using a decoy, rattling them in, calling them in or whatever. That was kind of what I was hell bent on doing, you know, this trip. And I would say today was the second time I was actually in a tree for the whole trip. Every other hunt has been on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, and knew full well, you know, just you and I talking, like we knew we were going to be doing a lot of driving, doing a lot of glassing.
we both spoke with and or texted with Jared Scheffler just about their approach out here. Mm-hmm. You know, those guys, how they kind of get it done, watch their videos, you know, learn some stuff or try to pick some stuff up from those guys. And it's funny because, you know, and they're really honest about they swing and miss a lot too, you know. But man, when they get it right, they just get it super right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it looks so fun, but it's just, it is hard. Like it is just challenging even to just find them, you know, like I think the one thing that I was most surprised by was just the amount of deer that we weren't seeing. Like I was expecting that, like not every day we would see like a big deer necessarily, but I was thinking like, you know, once a day, because we're not targeting like 170 inches or better deer. We're literally like, do we get excited about it? You know, Pope and Young, you know what I mean? Type of deer. Then we want to spot and stalk that one. And I thought for sure, I was like, man, because our standards aren't like Boone and Crockett, it's like, man, we should probably see one a day that we should be able to get an opportunity to either try to stalk or to watch and see if we can bet him to maybe hunt him the next day or whatever. Right. And we just weren't seeing the deer numbers. We ended up talking to Cole, the place that we were actually parked the camper. His grandfather owns all this property. And we just asked him, we were BSing with him. He stopped by and saw us the one day, and he just said that they got hit pretty hard with like EHD. I think he even said like the last 2 years or something like that.
It seemed like there was a big gap because we're seeing a bunch of rack bucks.
Yeah.
And then we're seeing upper end bucks, but there's like nothing there in the middle. Like
that's really interesting. I never really looked at it that way, but you're right. Like what we saw, and we were just talking about this. We've seen five deer, 150 or
seven.
Seven deer, 150 or better.
Yeah.
In 10 days to this point.
Yeah. Now, not all of those are like, you know, some of them are from the truck. Some of them are you're glassing from a mile away. I mean, those aren't all encounters.
Right.
Or even deer that you can really go play with, I guess.
Right.
But we've seen laid eyes on seven.
Yeah. And then I saw one today. We'll talk about that. That was 30s. Mm-hmm. You saw two really good ones today, if I'm not mistaken. I saw one that was in the once, like probably close to 160, like the first night here that I was hunting, you know, saw that deer. And then another one that was probably 30s or whatever that I saw that I glassed the following morning from a tree.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like we've seen a hand, but you're right. I never thought of it that way. It's like it's either been like pretty big deer, you know, a handful of like 130, 140, and then a lot of just like.
Just rack young
100-inch,
1 and 2 year olds.
Yeah, that's crazy. I never really thought of it that way. But so anyway, so I think that my expectations were, I probably had expectations set a little too high based on like what we're, you know, what we're experiencing. But, you know, Cole did mention that EHD hammered them and he said, you're just not seeing the same amount of bucks like out in fields, running does. And also, It stands to reason that if that's the case and you have that age gap, it means like the rut's a little weird too. Cause we were just talking about it today when we got back to the trailer. It's like, man, when I called in Iowa, like I almost always got a response. You know, I'd see a buck, he might be 70 yards away. I'd crack the antlers and he would turn and come, you know. Didn't matter if it was a 2-year-old, 3-year-old, whatever, 4-year-old, whatever it was coming or a grunt, it would come check it out. Here it's the opposite. Like I'm calling and I'm seeing deer and they're super sketched by like, okay, what is this? What's going on? You know, and it just seems like maybe there's just not as much competition.
I mean, that's a valid point. I mean, who knows? I think today and yesterday we're probably on the, we finally found a piece that has pretty good numbers.
Yeah.
At least the stuff that we've seen so far, that's definitely the highest deer density
for sure.
Area that we've walked or glassed.
Yeah. I would say we've probably seen as many deer in the past 2 days, pretty close to what we've seen the whole trip.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because, and I don't know, maybe we timed that piece right. We were talking about that too. It's like it just seems like that piece is starting to pop off. Bunch of fresh scrapes today that I found and stuff like that. So it just seems like maybe we timed it right. But So we're getting near the end of the trip here. I've got two more days. You're getting ready to scoot out of here probably tomorrow morning.
Yep.
But don't want to keep the people waiting. We do have some like some stories to tell, or at least that one really good one.
We have a couple good ones, yeah.
But I'll start with mine and let you bring it home.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah, that sounds like a plan.
Yeah. So basically my hunt played out like this. I got in Saturday or almost two weeks ago at this point, and you know, we're driving, you know, the long trip, you know, from Ohio and Pennsylvania, and we had a couple cell cameras that were out here that Chad actually put out in the spring during turkey season. And there was one piece that we had two good deer on. And as I'm literally getting ready to, I'm like maybe 30 minutes out from where we're going to park the trailer. And he calls me, he's like, how close are you? And I'm like, you know, 20, 30 minutes away. He's like, as soon as you get there, drop your stuff, head over to that piece, that big deer that's on camera just showed up, you know, whatever it was, like 30 minutes prior to that, or yeah, whatever the case was. So I was like, all right, cool. So I got here, dropped the camper, you know, it was, you know, I think you text me at like 1 o'clock or something like that. I didn't get a chance to get over there until I got everything kind of taken care of here until probably 4, you know, roughly. So a couple hours later, hop in, hunt on the ground, didn't see him, left with a little bit of daylight left just because I wanted to go out to that one corner of this where the CRP kind of meets this cut cornfield. And just kind of glass the rest of the evening to see if I can see anything and, you know, where they're maybe coming out, filtering out of, so I can get an idea of a game plan for the next couple of days or whatever. And who popped out of there with a doe? Sure enough, that big deer, probably 160-ish deer hanging out with that doe. And so I had some pretty high hopes for that piece, you know, because I was like, all right, he's in there. He's on a doe, which means give him 2 days, he should be off, and then circulating again to try to find another one. So went in the next morning, hunted from a tree that day and hunted all day, saw one rack buck, and was kind of set up for him to come back out, thinking that the doe is still going to kind of want to come feed to the edge of that cornfield. Just like this inside corner where the CRP kind of meets this cornfield, and there's kind of like a creek bottom that runs through there. And set up in there, and he never showed. But that morning, I saw that rack buck, and then I also saw the other big deer that was on camera. I glassed him at the corner of the CRP first thing in the morning, and I thought he might actually head down to you. And then the rest of my week, really, you know, it's been handful of does, you know, seeing does without bucks and swinging and missing, doing a lot of glassing, and just not seeing a lot of deer, to be quite honest. Kind of threw me for a loop because the sign doesn't necessarily pop out. It's a little counterintuitive, or feels different for me, because a lot of the sign you will see, like scrapes or whatever, a lot of times is on these edges, you know, whether it's on the edge of a CRP field or whether it's on the edge of a cornfield, a cut cornfield, or whatever the case is. And my brain is telling me this is all nighttime sign, but we always have, like, we have to remember that that's their, like a standing cornfield or a standing Milo field is their cover. That's as good as like a clear cut.
Yeah.
Back home, essentially. And so it was kind of taking a little bit to calibrate. And, you know, what I kind of learned from a spot that Chad found, and we'll talk about that here in a second, was that, you know, finding these little pockets in the timber where they're laying down a ton of sign is the gold mine. You know, it just isn't like you would find back east, at least. It's like, I haven't found it and haven't seen it as often here as I would see it back there in the timber. You know, and so that was the thing that was kind of taking a little bit to kind of get used to and figure out. A lot of these drainages too, or you look at them on the map, they look really good. You drive to them and these drainages have 10-foot high walls on the sides of them and they're not using them,
yep.
You know? So it was a lot of that, just going and qualifying pieces and trying to figure out what places are huntable, you know?
We've probably burned at least 3 days scouting pieces that
for sure
look good on a map and next to zero deer sign on.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And they might, you know, the one game you can play, and people have told us this, you know, folks that I've talked to, a lot of guys will just go sit those funnels, you know, and just wait it out. And that's a strategy you can use, you know. Actually, where we're parked, the guys that hunt, that own this draw that's right behind us, you know, there was a 216-inch deer and a 170-inch deer both killed out of that last year. And it's a big ditch. There's no ag around it. It's all just CRP, and they just go sit it. You know, there's not, you know, that's just all there is to it. They know that they're going to start moving at a certain time when all the crops get pulled off, and they go sit that funnel. They might have to sit it 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, who knows? But they know eventually a big deer will kind of pass through there. So that's their strategy. So fast forward to, I guess, the past 3 days, you know, we kind of been driving to some different pieces and trying to figure out where the deer might be holed up. And we finally got to this one piece. It just looked really good on a map. And when we got there, it actually looked really good when we got there too, as we kind of drove around it. And, essentially we ended up, I forget how it actually started.
We were driving down that, I guess, county road, which is like a tractor path basically.
Right.
And we saw, a public sign, and I caught it out of the corner of my eye, and I was like, whoa, is this public? And I felt like I had been there before, which we were there in the spring. So we backed up, looked at the sign. It was public. We confirmed that, looked at it on the map, and then we drove up to the top of the hill, and we tried to glass that cut cornfield to make sure it was cut or if it was a cornfield or a milo field.
Oh, that's right. I forgot this is how it started.
So you brought your binoculars up, and you were looking at the cornfield, and I looked out the window, and I was like, yo, there's a buck.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So we see that it's kind of, so this has like these buffer strips of CRP in between, like, you know, there's a cornfield on the top, I believe. And then there was like wheat, and then the buffer strip in between the corn and the wheat, and then another buffer strip after the wheat, and then CRP, and then this big bottom. And so Chad's like, there's a buck, there's a buck, there's a buck. And so we take a look at it really quick. You know, he's chasing a doe. We see what direction he's going. Chad throws it in reverse. I think he did 70 in reverse.
Try to.
Yeah. We get to a spot. We jump out of the truck. You know, I mean, I don't even know what all we grabbed. We grabbed our bows, and that was about it. Or, you know, I grabbed my bow, and you grabbed the camera, and yeah, that was about it. We didn't grab a decoy. I don't think I had a grunt call or anything on me. We run into the woods. We're basically trying to cut this deer off. We're watching. We watched where he was kind of running toward, and we kind of thought we had an idea where he was going. And so we run into the timber to try to cut this buck off, you know, and I'm in the back of my mind thinking like, this is some like whitetail adrenaline stuff, but I'm like, there's no way us two idiots are going to pull this off. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way we're going to catch this deer, you know? So we saw which draw he was potentially going to go into, you know, we thought that he would go into. And so we got in between and tried to cut him off, and we're standing there, and, you know, we don't hear anything. I might've actually had my rattling antlers with me. Yeah. And rattling sequence, you know, nothing. And, you know, we give it 15, 20 minutes, whatever it is. And Chad's like, you know, hey, I'm going to walk over here to this post. There was this fence line that kind of ran along this bottom, in between the bottom and the CRP field. Chad's like, I'm going to go stand over to this bank and see if I can see up along that edge, see if I can see anything. Maybe they're over there bedded down or whatever. So he walks over there, and I'm watching him. You know, he's maybe only 40 yards from me, like maybe. Yeah. And I'm watching him, and I'm kind of watching to see, you know, if there's any deer anywhere, you know, does or anything kind of filtering through. And it's really kind of thick kind of area, and there's like frag on the roadside of the of this bottom. And I'm standing there, and I turn over and I look at Chad, and he's walking down the bank, and I'm figuring we're probably just going to get ready to bounce out of there and do some more glassing. Then all of a sudden I see him pull his video camera up. And so now I put my binos on him because I'm watching him, because I'm trying to wait to see if he gives me a signal like he sees something. Well, now all of a sudden I hear a buck grunt and then a doe grunt. And so now I know there's deer there, and that's why he pulled his camera up. And so he's getting down off the bank to kind of tuck into cover. I'm still looking at him to kind of try to tell me where they're at, because I heard them, but I'm in between these two cedar trees and can't see anything. You know what I mean? And so I'm kind of, and I heard these deer walking, but they sounded like they were over my left shoulder, which I think they probably were. And then just kind of like came from behind and like around me or whatever. And I'm looking around, and all of a sudden I hear like a thump, and I turn my head and I don't see anything. And Chad's like, my man gets so excited when he sees deer. He's like, they're right there. They were right there. Basically comes running over. The deer was, what we then later found out was, 160-inch deer was like 20 yards from me.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't see it behind, where I was standing.
Yeah.
And there was a doe that filtered through, and she jumped into the frag. So fast forward, you know, we kind of hop out of there and kind of recalibrate, like, what the hell just happened? Like, we just saw a big deer I couldn't get a shot at. So then we decided, well, hey, I think that doe's in that frag. And it's not a huge piece of frag. I mean, it might only be 20 yards wide, 20 yards long,
super
maybe.
Small. You know, little island, yeah.
Yeah. And on the edge, like this CRP bank that kind of goes up into this CRP field. And we were like, you know what? And there's this trail that's around it and there's scrapes at the one end. We were like, you know what? The wind's in our favor if we sit on that side of the bank. Why don't we just like find a spot to kind of tuck in on the ground and sit the downwind side of that? Because if she's in there, then he's likely going to try to come in there and, you know, figure out, you know, where she's at, you know. So we do that. And I don't know, we sat for however long we were sitting there. And, you know, Chad's like, man, we should probably have a decoy out here. That way we at least like take the attention off of us. And maybe when he comes around, he sees that decoy or whatever the case is. And was like, yeah, it's probably a good idea. And Chad's like, you know what? I'm going to go back. You stay here. I'm going to go back to the truck and grab the decoy. Now, we can basically see the truck from where we're at, from where we park.
80 yards.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Tops. And there's a small draw between us and the truck. So I'm like, all right, cool. So Chad's walking over toward the truck and I'm watching the frag and we could hear something in the frag. Like there was a doe or something in there, like milling around. Like we could hear some movement. All of a sudden my man comes running over the CRP field. There's a big deer, big deer. He just starts yelling at me. And I'm like, I jump up, grab my bow, take, I don't even know why I'm running. Like I'm going to catch him. You know what I mean? Like, and that 160 inch deer just basically went up into that small draw embedded down with that doe. I mean, 60 yards, 50 yards from us.
Yep.
Like if that, right next to the road too.
Yep.
So at that point we were like, all right, we see where they went. You go across the road. There's more CRP, a big draw of cedars, and then a cedar line at the top of this like CRP field that on the map, you know, when you look at it, it's some form of crops. I think it said it was winter wheat or whatever, but when we, you know, it was actually cut soybean field. So we were like, you know what, we've already bumped them twice at this point. Well, we didn't bump them once. We bumped them.
Pressured them a couple of times.
Yeah. So we were like, we can either make a play on this deer, probably not going to see him again. Who knows where he's going to go. And it's really the only play we have. So we actually went up the long way around this CRP field along that cedar line at the top, tucked into that cut bean field and thought for sure. I mean, I would have put money on that's where that deer and that doe were at.
I would take that setup 100 times out of 100.
Yeah. And it was just like there were these two trails that were like clearly defined coming out of the head of this CRP. So I'm sorry, out of the head of this like draw. So this draw is just basically a line of cedars, super thick, kind of gets a little bit fatter at the end of it. And then there's trails that come out of it. And they're two of them are just like goat paths straight to the cut bean field. And we were basically set up between those two paths. That way it's like no matter if they kind of came along the cedar line and like looped around in front of us, we'd have a shot. And if they came, you know, to our left, essentially just straight out of the cedars to the field, I would have a shot opportunity there. And we did not see a single deer. Now, the other kind of kicker is this weekend, pheasant season opened. So, you know, that's the other kind of, you know, piece of, you know, variable that we have in play is dealing with, you know, not just regular hunting pressure, but also pheasant hunting pressure, which those guys are going in and driving CRP fields and in Milo trying to kick up birds. So part of our strategy one day was just literally following pheasant hunters around in Glasson while they were pheasant hunting to see if they kicked big deer out of a draw somewhere and then try to go, you know, make a play on it. So that was that day. So at least now we found a piece that had good deer. And so essentially I went back in this morning and I had a shooter at a, you know, I don't know, probably 20 yards and couldn't get a shot. He was behind a tree. I was on the ground. He came in, saw the decoy, perked up, went to go to the downwind side, you know, worked a scrape and then was coming in. And, I don't know if he saw me move when I drew my bow back. I drew when he was behind a tree, you know, or if maybe he caught my scent or whatever. I felt like my wind was pretty good at that setup. It was just, you know, ground hunting's tough, man. You know, it's like those guys that do it consistently and do it well. You know, it's like I've always had respect for them, but I have even more respect for them. I've spent the better part of 2 weeks trying to kill one on the ground. And just, you know, I've gotten close to deer. I've had deer within 5 yards of me, you know, just not the right ones. And this one was first time I had an opportunity to draw my bow back. Good deer, 130-ish inch 8-point, you know, would have been tickled pink with him. But once I got some light and could see that area, bunch of scrapes, some rubs. So, and Chad was glassing and kind of seeing deer filter down this draw, which dumps right into where I'm at. And there's kind of a draw on the opposite side. So it's really kind of like a thermal hub, and it makes sense why all the sign is essentially laid out there the way it is. So my plan is to basically hunt that the next 2 days that I have left here, because it's the spot that we've seen the best deer activity, the most deer, and there's a couple of really good deer that are in that spot. So that's my game plan, and that's been my trip to this point.
Yeah, I think, you know, it took us a while to find a piece like that, but we have cold weather coming in.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I saw a handful of bucks there. I guess it would be four shooters between the deer that you saw and the three that I saw.
Yeah.
All in that little pocket.
All in that one little corner. Yeah.
So, I mean, the odds are in your favor, I think.
I saw, counting that small little scrubby spike that I saw this afternoon, I saw five deer in that spot. I saw four this morning before 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, at least four does in there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, once we found it, it was kind of a no-brainer because it's a great piece of public, the way it's set up, great habitat. The other thing you don't get a lot out here is edge and structure. You know, it's almost like the big woods doesn't have structure, you know, except for maybe like some clear cuts and stuff like that. Like this place is almost, it's similar in some ways to where there's just not a lot of structure, just like big open fields and like small little pieces of structure that they utilize, but it's not super noticeable. And this place actually has structure and it kind of helps define their movement and stuff like that. Plus the private neighbor that is just to the north.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Practice is big sign on his property. Practice is QDM. So felt pretty good about the fact that they're not killing everything that walks. And they have some food plots and food sources. So we're kind of playing that game of like set up relatively close to them, trying to use the draw that they have. I think the public has the better bedding. You know, when we drove past their property, I think they have some. And I would say does probably hold up there. But just on the backside of that's kind of where I'm at in the habitat is primo in there, and it's proven out with just the amount of deer that we've seen in the 2 days at that spot. So that's my story, man. But Chad's got one for the ages. We're gonna turn the mic over to Cherokee Sylvester.
It was intense. I'll say that. You know, coming out here with expectations to kill a 130-inch deer, that's all really what I was trying to do. Like, never in my wildest dreams could I have thought that, you know, hunting on the ground and in the manner that we've been doing over the last, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 days, whatever it's been, would produce what I killed. Like, it's just, I'm still kind of pinching myself, how that all played out. But essentially it started in the spring when we were out here turkey hunting. You know, we came out to turkey hunt and, walk and scout as many pieces as we could. The very last piece that we scouted in the spring was this little, I'm not even sure how many acres it is, maybe 200 acres, maybe something like that.
Probably.
Piece way out of the way, all by itself. It's an hour drive from where we're sitting right now.
Yeah.
It was kind of isolated, had a little, you know, little creek running through it and had some timber. But it was the last piece that we scouted in the spring and it had a ton of deer sign in it. But it also had a ton of people sign in it.
Right.
There were, you know, hang on tree stands that had been left up from seasons prior. There were trail cameras in there and it had limited access. I mean, you can only access at some point from the northern side of the property. I mean, you could walk around, you know, on the property lines and circle around the backside, but for the most part, limited access. So the guys I was with said I was crazy for not putting a camera up there. But in my mind, one of the things that always play into my hunting strategy coming away from home is just like, take the human pressure element, take that variable and just get away from it because it's something you can't control. It's a wild card that sometimes it can work for you, but most of the time it's probably gonna hurt you. So in the back of my mind, I knew that piece had deer sign, but I didn't want to mess with it. So 3 or 4 days in, you know, as we were having a harder time finding deer, not seeing what we wanted to see, one afternoon when we split up, I went down there just to check it out. You know, on my way down, you know, I was scouting my way in, kind of in the interior. This piece lays out like I called it a lazy W, like if you picture a W and like the two ends just kind of like laying down, it made like a bowl, and there's two fingers of timber coming out in the middle. So I remembered where we had bumped those deer in the spring and went to the southeast point, which had a northwest wind. So I was giving up like the back third of the property and went right down the middle and scouted that edge. Well, I bumped two does, or what I thought was two does, not very far into the timber. And they ran through like this inside corner of CRP. And that spot had a couple things going for it, which I'll kind of get into later, but they followed that inside corner, the edge there. So I was just basically following where they walked or ran and wanted to see what was over there. And as I got over that inside corner, I could see on the opposite side, the timber started to open up a little bit, and I seen a buck with his nose to the ground. And I was like, game on, you know? And at this point, I got my pack on. I had my bow in my hand, you know, sticks and everything on my pack. I take like 5 or 6 steps back and get into this little cedar thicket right on that inside corner. And I get in, I grab my rattling antlers, and I start raking a tree and making some ground noise, hoping to draw that deer out into that CRP just to get a better look at him. So I do that. I sit for 15 or 20 minutes and I don't get a response, like nothing. So I'm like, all right, well, he's on a hot doe. Like, I'm probably not going to pull him off, you know?
Right.
So I turned around. I had the cedars to my back. And as I turned around, I caught a rub over to my right, and a good rub. And it was fresh. Fresh as in like the last week.
You know? Right. Yeah. So we're really kind of past like that. That's the other kind of thing that's been kind of like different hunting for me, at least travel hunting. On this trip, is that a lot of times I'd be able to hunt fresh sign.
Right.
Where this, we're kind of on the back end of like when they're really laying down a ton of scrapes. And it's like, if you find one that's fresh, like that's the gold mine, but you're just not going to find a ton of them that are super fresh right now.
Nope. They're on does right now.
Yep.
But as I caught that rub, you know, I looked back into the cedar thicket and there were several other rubs. So I was like, you know, trying to investigate. But at the same point in time, I knew that buck, that doe ran over that opening and that buck was over there. So I was trying to kind of like find a tree to get in. And on the edge of that cedar thicket, there was this big dead, well, it was a big tree. And I'm like, it looks straight, which you don't get here. Mm-hmm. You know, that's another theme is like, you're either in locust trees that are thorny as all get out, or you're in these
cottonwoods that are just giant,
or they're just laid way over.
It's
just terrible. Limited tree stand setups or saddle setups for that matter. But anyways, as I'm walking through the cedar thicket, there's just more rubs in a 15 yard area than I've ever seen. There's probably 12, 13, 14 rubs in this cedar thicket, and right smack dab in the middle was a bed, worn to the ground, dirt bed. And I'm like, all right, well, I don't remember finding this in the spring, but this is big sign. And there's a bed right in the middle.
Big bed.
The deer could lay there with a north wind and know anything that's coming from the north because it's limited access on there. And it's also downwind of doe bedding. I'm like, all right, this makes sense. I'm already here. I'm going to walk this exit trail. Only see where he's going, you know?
Right.
So I walk the exit trail and it goes right to that spot where the does ran. And I saw that buck with his nose to the ground. And what that spot was it had an inside corner that created a little pinch. And on the backside of it was a creek. And this spot is like, look on the map, it's like a typical rut funnel. Mm-hmm. But you had edge CRP to timber, you had edge on the creek, and then there was about a 60 yard or 50 yard patch of basically like just high stem count stuff. It had like reedy stuff in it, briars, a bunch of locust saplings, just real thick, nasty. And that basically went from that deer's bed on that cedar thicket for 50 yards right to his exit trail. And on the very, I guess the last bit of cover, there were some deadfalls there with some tops. And then just on the other side, there was some cedars kind of sporadic and it opened up, And that's basically when I walked that exit trail on the opposite side of the creek. So to the south side of the creek, it was kind of open and brushy there, but there was a row of cedar trees that paralleled the creek there. And right at that point where those cedars met that exit trail, there were three or four big rubs there. So the deer was obviously leaving that bed. The rubs were in that direction. He was leaving that bed, and that was his exit. But that day, I set up there in the evening based on the does that I saw and that buck with his nose to the ground, a typical rut funnel. So as I'm trying to get set up in this tree, I have a terrible time. break a stick, can't get to where I want to get. This goes on for like 45 minutes, maybe an hour. Just like, I'm super pissed. Like, got to be in the tree. I can't see anything. You know, I'm just frustrated as all get out. And as I'm climbing down, tearing my stuff down, my bow's on the ground, and I'm hanging off this tree with my stupid lineman's belt on, here comes that doe. Here comes a rack buck chasing her, like, right in front of me. I'm just like, this is ridiculous.
It can't be any worse.
Yeah, it can't at that point. I'm like, God, man, I just need to get down and get set up. So I left my sticks in the tree, hopped down, grabbed my bow.
Literally left them in the tree till today.
I just got them today. Yeah. They were there since the 10th.
The 11th.
I was there the 10th.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you were there the 10th. Yeah.
6 days, almost a week. So anyways, I get set up in this cedar tree. And basically, I just take some branches and lay them out in front of me, take a deadfall, put it up, make myself a little ground blind. And that evening, I don't know how many different bucks that I saw, but I seen that doe get chased in that little pinch 5 or 6 times, just different, probably the same bucks over and over and over, right. But a handful of rack bucks chasing that doe. So I'm like, okay, this isn't that bad. You know, I have a hot doe here. There's big sign. These little bucks are going to push this doe around until she's ready to be bred. And then hopefully a big deer comes and breeds her, you know, and
right.
I'm right here. So I go back in there the next morning. And with that in the back of my mind, I went in at gray light because I wanted to know and be able to see on my way in if I could see a doe or see any deer. Like, the one thing I did not want to do was bump that doe off that property, because if there was a buck with her locked down, like, obviously he's going to follow, and then
right. Game
I'm
over.
Screwed. Yeah. So I get in clean. I set that little ground blind. Sun comes up, you know, 8 o'clock rolls around, nothing. Around 8:30, and I'm facing, I guess I should explain this the way that I'm facing. I'm facing the north to that CRP, towards the CRP where I've seen that doe being chased back and forth through that pinch. So the creek is behind me. So behind me, I have the creek. To my right, to my back, I have a cedar tree. To my right, 3 o'clock, I have a deadfall. And then out in front of me, I have some branches broken. Then at 9 o'clock, I have another cedar tree. So I'm covered up pretty good.
Yeah. It was a tight little setup.
Really limited on what you could see, except for, you know, to the north. To the north, you could see. Well, you could see a couple hundred yards, but
right.
That edge was probably 35 yards out. That edge with the CRP hit the timber. So 8:30 rolls around, and I'm sitting facing north, and I hear something behind me. So I'm like peeking through the cedar tree over my shoulder, and I catch a glimpse of a buck back in that brushy open stuff. And I'm like looking, trying to make out what it is, and I could see it, but I can't get a good look at it, you know? And I was probably looking 15, 20 seconds, maybe a minute. And then I hear something walking like in the creek. So I turn all the way around. Now I'm the cedar tree's in my face. I'm facing the creek. I'm facing south. And out pops this 120-inch buck. And he's on the other side of the cedar tree from me. So we're talking like five yards, maybe not even 5 yards. Might be closer than that. Mm-hmm. Maybe 15 feet. So like 3 yards. Like, he is like right there. And I'm like, oh, okay. And at that time, I'm staring at him. He's staring at me. We can't really see each other because of the cedar tree. And this bigger deer, the deer that I saw in that open brushy stuff, walks down to the very edge of the creek where those cedar trees, that row of cedar trees, met that exit trail. And I'm looking at that deer now. I'm like, oh, damn, that's a 150-inch deer. Like, we're in a game. Well, about that time, that younger 120 spooked, like, boom, took off. And he knew something wasn't right. I mean, he was standing there, and he wasn't like doing the head bob or anything like that. He just poof, just took off. Well, when he took off, I snort wheezed. And that bigger deer was back there, and he didn't know what the hell was going on. He was like, all right, I just saw this, my punk younger brother run off. Like, wonder what's going on. And he like kind of did one of these, and then he just turned and followed him, kind of paralleled him on the creek. So I actually had enough cover that I got up with my bow and paralleled him on the opposite side, thinking if he comes down to the creek edge, like, I might be able to get a shot. So I got a really good look at that deer. And then eventually he just wandered off, and I lost visual of him. So at that point, I'm like kind of irritated a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm excited but irritated at the same point in time, because if I would have been in a tree, I could have shot that deer.
Right.
And that's the only thing that was running through my mind. So I go back to, you know, my little ground setup, and I sit down. 15 minutes later, from the north, I have a 115-inch rack buck come in. And when he came in through the CRP, he was like, you could see he was tall and tight. Mm-hmm. And I actually picked my bow up, turned the camera on. I was like, I'm shooting this deer.
Right.
He came in at 35 yards, and I filmed him, and he kind of did his thing, and walked back towards that first timber, first finger of timber, which those other two bucks worked towards too. So later in the afternoon, you know, that was the last, I guess, deer sighting that I had in the morning. And that was, I'm going to say all that was done and over with well before 9 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. It was like 8:30 because you text me.
Yeah.
Like that you, right after you saw the 115, like, yeah, that rack buck, you text me because you were like, I just saw a 120, a 150, and a 115.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the back of my mind, I keep telling myself I need to be in a tree. Because if those deer do the same thing, like, I need to be able to shoot to the other side of the creek.
Right.
Can't do it where I am. So there was probably three or four times throughout the afternoon that I physically got up out of that ground blind and walked like a 15-yard circle looking at trees. Oh, I think I can get in this tree. I can't. There's too much crap hanging down from it. Maybe I can get in this tree. Nope. Giant 8-foot cottonwood. Can't get sticks around it. So I did that a bunch, just completely frustrated that I could not be in a tree and I couldn't see anything. And the wind was blowing that day like 20-some miles an hour.
Yeah,
so I can't hear anything, can't see anything. I'm like, this is never going to work. Like, this is terrible.
Right.
So like by 3 o'clock, my knees are killing me because I'm bent over, you know, on my knees all day. And I'm like, I can't get into a tree. I need to make this ground blind work. So I cut a little, like a basketball size hole out of the backside of this cedar tree, so I could shoot to the edge of the creek, thinking, like, this is the only shot I'm going to have. You know, if they do the same thing, like, at least I am prepared, semi-prepared. Right. So 3 o'clock, I do that, and I sit flat down on my butt with that deadfall to my back, cedar tree in that little shooting lane to my left, the opening and the CRP is out to my right, and I'm basically staring, like, looking at that bed in that same direction, and I'm 70 yards from it. So at 4 o'clock, I see something moving over in those deadfalls, like right on the edge of that cover on that exit trail. And I could see a deer's nose, and I could see the deer licking its nose and like putting it to the air, but I don't see any antlers. Don't see any tine. So I'm like, all right, well, there's this doe's coming through. I'm like, this is money. So I pick my bow up and get it vertical, you know, and that deer's there for probably 3 minutes doing that, just kind of chilling out right there. And at that point, I'm like, I still don't see any antlers. So the deer starts walking towards the creek. And I should say this is like 13 yards. Like, this is already like in the bubble, you know?
Yeah.
So this deer starts walking around these treetops, and I can see the body. I see the brown body. Still don't see any antlers. So I'm convinced this thing's a doe. Well, about that time, 170-inch buck jumps over that deadfall through my shooting window, takes 3 or 4 steps, and is on the backside of this cedar tree, like 8 feet away from me. And I'm like, holy crap, that's a freaking giant. I'm sitting flat on my butt. A deer's to my 9 o'clock through a cedar tree. And I'm like, I draw my bow at that point. I'm like, all right, he's through this opening. I'm going to draw now. I have a shooting lane behind me, but I know if that deer takes 3 steps, like, he's going to win me and it's over. So I'm like, on my butt, full draw. I'm like, I got to get to my feet and get turned around. Got to get to my feet or get to my knees and get turned around. So I get one leg up. So I have 1 foot on the ground now. And I'm tucked into there's cedar branches all around me. I have a camera set up next to me. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to get to my knees. Like, this is never, ever going to work. I got to let my bow down. And the deer's been there for probably, I'm going to say 5, 6, 7 seconds, something like mm-hmm. that. And I can see him through the cedar trees. He's not looking at me. He doesn't know like anything's up. He's just kind of like standing there. So I let my bow down. As soon as I let my bow down, he snaps his head. And like now we're staring at each other, just like that 120, staring at each other through the cedar tree. So I'm like, oh, this is terrible. Bad. Like, this is not good. Like, how am I going to draw again, you know? Well, the deer ends up picking his head up. And so it's like now or never. So I rip my bow back. Deer turns around. He takes three or four steps. And I shoot him through that little basketball size window, quartering away at 5 yards. High lung shot. Punched
through the other shoulder blade.
Yep, yeah, punched through his other shoulder blade. The deer ran back towards his bed. Yep. Like he was trying to go back to his bed, and he didn't even make it. He went 50 yards and died.
Yep. Yep. We found him in the creek.
Yep. Clint found him in the creek.
Yeah, yep. That was the yeah, I mean, not a ton of blood on the blood trail.
Well, it wasn't like high lung.
Yeah.
I wasn't really expecting.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
The cavity's going to fill up, and we got the spray from his.
At the very end, it was like that's whenever, you know, we were getting enough blood that it was like, you know, we knew that it was
drops.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it opened up, and I just threw my headlamp like ahead of me, and I could see the deer laying. I could just see the tine sticking out of the creek. And I'm like, there's your buck. And Chad's looking around. He's like, where? And I'm like, he's right there. He's like, I don't see him. Where is he at? And then finally he sees him. He's like, oh my God. He's like, are you kidding me? Dude, it's a giant. It's a, if you haven't seen it yet, go to the Exodus Instagram page and check it out. There's a post there. I'll probably use one of the pictures of that for this post for the podcast. You can check it out there as well. But killer deer, man. Awesome. You know, drop off his right side, drop tine off his right side.
Yep.
Mass for days.
Yep.
Tall.
Yeah. I mean, anything that you could ask for. I mean, it's just beautiful, beautiful animal.
Yeah.
Insanely intense 4 minutes.
Yeah.
It'll probably never be replicated in my hunting life ever again to be able to draw.
Right.
Twice on a deer like that inside of 5 yards is absurd.
Yeah.
Especially on the ground, like that'll never happen again. But
because you'll be in a tree,
probably. But the drag, man. Oh my gosh, we can't tell a story and not talk about the drag.
That was bad. Yeah,
the way the crow flies, it was 700 yards from where the deer died to the road. The way the crow flies.
If we had to loop around all that deadfall and all the
deadfalls and the locust thorn thicket.
Yeah. God, that thing was miserable.
90% of it was uphill. It was bad. It was bad to the point where I had to go back to the truck and get water because I thought I was going to pass out at one point.
Yes.
And you told me like, yo, if you need to take a break and go get water, like go do it. Because if you pass out, I can't carry both of you guys out of here.
Exactly. Yeah. That was a brutal drag. And then like the wind started ripping, it started raining. That was one of the worst drags. I mean, cause you know, you would think like you're dragging on grass, it'd be kind of easy, but it's like, man, you don't know how much grass gets tied up into 170 inches of antler until you're dragging it through a CRP field that the grass is freaking waist to chest high.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of drag on that animal. But man, that was this trip has been killer. I've got, like I said, I've got two more days as people are listening to this to hopefully fill a tag, but regardless of how that outcome is, it's been a killer trip. I appreciate having a road dog like you to share these things with, man, because not everyone's built to live in a 6x10 trailer together.
I love it, dude. It's
and
awesome.
And be stinky and have good days, have bad days, you know. And, dude, since you killed, I mean, you've been out here for days now without a tag to fill and just basically been chauffeuring me around to glass and do setups and stuff like that. So
Yeah, man.
You know, thanks for being a good friend, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. That's what it's about, dude.
Yeah, for sure. All right, gang. Well, that is the story here from Kansas. We'll have a final recap here probably in like the next week or so whenever I get back home to Pennsylvania, get a shower, eat something that is not dehydrated, That is coming soon. And until next time, thank you all for listening.
All right, folks, that is a wrap for today's show. I'd like to thank all of you for listening. And if you haven't yet, please head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating. And hell, while you're at it, head over to YouTube and give us a sub there too. I'd be super appreciative if you'd be able to do those two things for me. And before I shut this thing down, I need to give a big shout out to our partners who continue to help us make this podcast possible. Tethered, Exodus Outdoor Gear, Skull Brew Coffee Company, and Maven Optics. And until next time, we'll see y'all.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
All right, gang, the new Truth merch is in stock at truthfromthestand.com and on YouTube below any of the Truth From The Stand videos. I've got some new hats, beanies, t-shirts, long sleeve t-shirts, and sweatshirts. There's even a new do hard shit hat for those of us who like to embrace microdosing adversity. So head to truthfromthestand.com and check out the new gear and use the code TRUTH, T-R-U-T-H, and save yourself some cash on the new gear.